Sangha is a real comfort in this moment. Supported, safe, sharing a philosophy of life. What a gem. It really brings home the meaning of Sangha as refuge, doesn't it? We're just past the halfway point of our timely investigation of equanimity, upekkha. I like Christina Feldman's translation of upekkha. To be in the middle of, or to stand in the middle of. We do this with poise and with wisdom and balance and compassion. She notes, it's often hard-earned from our experience of standing in the middle of joys and sorrows. It reminds me of her translation of metta, standing near. But now we're right there in the middle of whatever is happening, strengthened and softened in our hearts and minds by all the paramis, generosity, morality, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, resolution, loving kindness, and now equanimity. We stand right here, right in the middle, with equanimity protecting our hearts from the extremes of reactivity and despair. That is a gift in this moment. Equanimity is the last item in three prominent lists in our tradition, the Brahmaviharas, the seven factors of enlightenment, and the paramis. It's both the end result of all these practices and a way into all these practices. We're always beginning again, after all. Why not start out and end up in equanimity? Hearts and minds open. Strengthened by our practice, we stand in the truth of the moment. This happened, is happening. It's real. Coming back to this over and over. The first step in understanding how to move forward in the world is to face reality. Acknowledge it. Know it. Always with self-love, self-compassion. This is a hard time for many of us, most of us. For a while on election night and afterward, I felt adrift in the flood of emotions. I've had helpful conversations about how to take this in, how to feel the feelings without letting them overwhelm us, how to grieve, if that's how we feel. But some conversations, hot with blaming, fear, and projection, they've shaken me. I felt people are going under and trying to pull me down with them. I felt how easy it could be to tumble in. Two evenings after the election, in a gathering led by Tuari and Kerry, those of us fortunate enough to crowd in, we felt the power, the love, the strength of Sangha. Much wisdom was shared. One teaching stood out for me. Tuari called equanimity a fierce energy. A fierce energy. I've been pondering this. My go-to tool for pondering is imagination. In his book, The World Could Be Otherwise, Norman Fisher points to the power of imagination in our spiritual practice. He says, the imagination plays in the deep end, where the heart and love hold sway. Spiritual practice is one of the key sites of imagination. So I imagine what it means to face this moment, to stand in the middle of it with a fierce energy. What do we do if we fall into a raging river? No moaning and complaining and blaming and arguing with the moment. We face what's happening and what we need to do. We call up a fierce energy and get to work to save ourselves. We paddle and look for something we can use as a life raft. We grasp onto it, pull ourselves up, and lie there a while, catching our breath, letting our heart rate slow. In a while, we try sitting up, balancing ourselves, getting our bearings, figuring out where we are, looking for a good landing. This is what we've been doing this past few weeks, right? When we're steadier, we can secure ourselves on the raft and poke around in the water for something to use as a pole or a hook. Finally, we stand and, balancing on the raft, work our way to the shore. It takes a lot of focus, body awareness, shifting to maintain our balance, hard work. We called up a fierce energy, powerful, determined to pull ourselves up out of the flood of emotions, of news. Many of us have experienced this ability to just focus on what needs to be done in the moment in the midst of an emergency. Where's that come from? We know what needs to be done, and we do it. That's equanimity. It's possible for all of us. This is reality. This is what's happened, and this is how we save ourselves. Standing in the middle of it all, firmly rooted in our practice, these are the moments we practice for. Both Tuareg and Carrie mentioned that night. We call up the energy to ground ourselves in the Dharma, in the path. This is not a violent, warlike fierceness, but a clear-eyed determination, perseverance. It isn't a panacea, a cure-all. We'll still be troubled. We absolutely stay with our feelings, feel our feelings. And we call on the Dharma to help us maintain our balance. Only then can we be there for others. They're going to need us. Our equanimity can be a refuge for those around us, but we need to move with care. I learned this early. As a child, I hoped to calm my parents, who both had anger issues, by being the peacemaker in the family. I thought if I could just find the right note, I could orchestrate peace in the household. I was using my imagination and thinking of characters in books and movies. I think you can picture a child trying to be the calming hero. We can talk about this. Just be calm. It didn't work. My big mistake was thinking I could impose equanimity on others, get them to chill. I mean, really, how can you make somebody else chill? But you know, I was a kid. It only stoked the fire. We can't impose balance on others. Equanimity comes from within. And it comes, it grows. We can't force it. This peaceful balance, the strengthening of grounding ourselves in reality without letting greed, hatred, and delusion tempt us into arguing with it. This is how it is right now. Clear-eyed, seeing the situation. As Christina Feldman said, it's hard-earned. Only from that strong base can we see how to move forward. Ajahn Sushito calls equanimity evenness of mind. The mind refrains from delight and sorrow, ups and downs. This is how he describes it. It's an even-minded acceptance of oneself and others. With equanimity, I can tune into wherever you're at, up or down, and that doesn't change my empathy with you. Further, it comes with the understanding that whatever you're going through right now will change. And I trust your capacity to pass through this phase. I trust your capacity to pass through this phase. In that sense, it's an immense offering of respect and also of perspective on wherever we find ourselves in the present. With equanimity, we can allow ourselves and others to grow past all views and perspectives. This is a beautiful gift in this moment. We can be with friends and family freaking out, worrying, emoting, maybe chortling, and simply bear witness. Be there for them, with them, trusting that they'll find their way back to a calmer perspective. We can observe, stand with, while maintaining our inner balance. That's the practice, the promise, and the gift. Steady in our awareness, not changed by their emotions, not threatened by them. You can really listen to someone if you know that you're not threatened by what they're saying. You can take it in. Recently, someone close to me was going through a very hard time after a car accident. They were not hurt, nor was their car, and at first they seemed fine. But gradually I could see they were living through the accident over and over again. And it was shifting and changing in their imagination, in their nervous system, becoming a truly horrific event. Normally a level-headed, rational person, they became increasingly paranoid about driving, doubtful about their driving skill, clammy with fear when preparing to drive someplace new, clearly traumatized. Of course, I wanted to help. I wished I could fix it, bring them back to their usual steadiness. But I learned my lesson as a kid and a few other missteps as an adult, and I did not try to fix anything. I just listened. Over and over, it was hard at times, I listened, nodded, asked careful questions to tease out the reality, but offered no advice. At some point, they started asking me about how the Dharma would deal with this, which was a wonderful thing for them to ask. And I shared a few things about breathing and being in the moment, feeling their feet on the ground, how the earth held them. But mostly, I was just calmly there for them, not getting spun up with them. My presence proved an anchor for them, a refuge. They were fine now. Everything came out okay, and they know it. No more nightmares. Time and someone listening and helping them to breathe helped. I stood with them in the middle of it all, and I trusted they would recover, and that I could listen without any anxiety for my own peace of mind. Equanimity allowed that. Much of this I learned by working with a fictional character I created over 30 years ago. Magda Digby, also known as the River Woman, a wise healer in my longest-running mystery series. That's imagination at work. I'm a medieval historian. Instead of teaching, I write mysteries set in medieval England, especially the city of York and the surrounding shire. Magda appeared in the first book in the Owen Archer series, and she's been an integral part of the world through many books. I'm writing the 16th. She's become my main character's mentor. She's an elderly woman who lives on a rock in the Tidal River, just outside the walls of York. At times, her rock is an island. At times, one can wade out to it. There's a metaphor there. She's trusted as a healer despite being a rarity in 14th century England, shunning the all-encompassing Catholic Church. She has her own quiet ethics, charging nothing to the poor for her services, turning no one away if she believes she can help them, judging no one. Her very presence calms people. A character says, "You bring calm with you, Dame Magda. It is a gift." "Nay, it is a skill learned by observing, listening, trying, and discarding. Her presence is calming because she can be with whatever is happening to someone, listening to them, observing them, seeing how it is for them, and considering how she might help. No matter if the injury is self-inflicted, if the person was injured attacking a friend of hers, she never scolds or judges them. She might tease them, but it's all in kindness. Her purpose is to heal them if she can. If she can't, this is 14th century medicine, no machines, no awesome painkillers. She's honest with them. Not cruel, honest. She does difficult things. Amputations were commonly the only way to prevent a badly injured leg or arm from poisoning the rest of the body. If it's needed, she does it. And she always refers to herself in the third person. She, Magda, never I, as a vow to remember her purpose as a healer, helping others. Did I know I was writing a model of equanimity in Magda Digby? No. I knew I enjoyed writing her. It felt good. And from the beginning, readers let me know how much they enjoyed her too. I was aware that when she entered a scene, I drew from somewhere deep within for her wisdom. This is how I work with a character. I go quiet and put myself in their mind, seeing through their eyes, imagining how their body feels in this moment. With Magda, the wise woman, the skilled healer, I bring myself firmly into the moment because that's what she does. Her focus is on this moment, this patient, this illness or injury, or the advice someone is asking her. She knows that words have meaning, power for the listener, and she speaks with care. I've learned to be Magda. I feel the strength and calm in her small, wizened body. I feel myself smiling with recognition. Yes, Magda's seen this before. "Ah, but you say, you created her." I did. Magda rose up and onto the page from somewhere, deep in my subconscious. A mix of research, stories heard and read, and she's continued to grow and deepen with each book. Now, when I find myself in uncomfortable situations, I ask, what would Magda do? I imagine I'm her, considering the moment with her calm eyes. Am I teaching myself the Dharma? Or, as one of my teachers once suggested, is the Dharma doing me? Or Magda? Whatever the magic here, it's helpful. This is the power of imagination. I can feel how Magda would stand equally near everything in the moment. This is how it is, what is called for. In 2019, I promised a dying friend who had worked closely with me on my books that the next book in the series would give Magda center stage, and I'd reveal more of her mysterious background. My friend died on Christmas Eve 2019. I'd read her the first few chapters of the promised book, very rough drafts, and promised to finish. The book is set in a summer in which the Black Death reappears in England. And then came COVID. Had I not promised Joyce, I might have abandoned the book. I came very close. I can't write about the Black Death in the midst of COVID. I would have lost a masterclass in equanimity. Just as with our pestilence, fear drove crazy theories of the cause of the return of the bubonic plague. For Magda, one of those was pointed toward women like her, female healers. In the book, a cleric warns the people of York that God's punishing them for entrusting their health to witches like Magda, turning them against the woman who might help and comfort them in a frightened time. This felt really familiar going through COVID. Her friends worry for her, but she's been in the situation before. She will see to the poor outside the city who have no one else. There are other healers who can see to those within. And when things calm down, the city people will return to her. It's how the world works. She doesn't argue with reality. She doesn't doubt herself. With clear eyes and mind, She sets about doing what she can. Equanimity. Imagination. I think of it like practicing metta, saying the phrases over and over, a concentration practice that allows me to stand near. This is what Norman Fisher's pointing toward when he says, all imaginative productions rise up from the unconscious to expand the soul, to help us feel who we really are and what the world really is, and to see the possibilities. Zen Buddhist Roshi Joan Halifax uses a powerful metaphor that I think beautifully sums up how equanimity helps us move through the world with compassion, no matter what. It certainly describes Magda. Strong back, soft front. She says, all too often, our so-called strength comes from fear, not love. Instead of having a strong back, many of us have a defended front shielding a weak spine. In other words, we walk around brittle and defensive, trying to conceal our lack of confidence. But if we strengthen our backs, metaphorically speaking, and develop a spine that's flexible but sturdy, then we can risk having a front that's soft and open, representing choiceless compassion. The place in your body where these two meet, strong back and soft front, is the brave, tender ground in which to root our caring deeply. Fierce energy, strong back, soft front. I think we can do this. Thank you for your kind attention. Can we sit a moment, feeling our strength, our open hearts? I lived through my first Dharma talk. So we're going to break into breakout groups. And I think I could use some help from either Suze or Lauren in doing this. So for those of you who need to leave, this is a good time. And thank you for coming and sharing your presence with the Sangha. So we have 15 minutes to share what we talked about, you talked about in your groups, or something that's come to mind. You can unmute or raise a hand. Judith?
Hi. Yeah, I really enjoyed your talk. Thank you very much. It went very well. And a lot of it interested me, but as a writer myself, I was particularly interested in you're talking about your character and where this comes from, this understanding that you're putting into her that you don't even know you have. And what I have found in writing both poetry and also music, because I've also done that in the past, is that it feels to me like there's a door that I open or close. And if I open like the haiku door, haiku just comes in. I don't know where it comes from. It's like something's coming from some place. I mean, it's obviously in me, but that's what it reminded me of. You know, there's something happening when you open up that part of you that you don't necessarily understand. I don't understand.
No. No creative people that I know. Is my voice going crazy again?
No, it's okay. We'll tell you.
Thank you. I have this crazy microphone. But nobody understands it. And it's a wonderful mystery where these people come from, because they'll just walk on and I'll go, oh, hi, Julie. Thank you.
Hi, Candace. I want to also say that I really very much enjoyed your talk and appreciate the way you presented it. It resonated with me. I have a slightly different thing that I just wanted to bring up because it came in our group, which was there was a suggestion about Kalyanamitta groups. And I know that at some point we had, it was a spinoff of our Sunday sit, but, you know, a little bit of feedback on how things are going and what the Sangha could need and use. And I feel like one of the things, and forgive me if I'm just like missing it, but one of the things was, is there a way that we could make it a little bit easier through Sims to form these groups? So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Oh,
thank you.
I will bring that up to Tim. Yes. Yeah. When I was on the board years ago, I was sort of overseeing the Kalyanamitta groups, and they can be very complicated to put together, but if someone is really willing to be a facilitator, they can come together pretty easily. So I'll mention it to Tim. Thank you. That's a great idea. Suze.
I want to just follow up on the KM group, the Kalyanamitta groups, because a couple years ago we made it pretty easy with Kubba. So I'm happy to talk to Kubba again. And Julie and anybody else who is interested, I think you're absolutely right that it can be kind of onerous and then you don't want to do it. But I don't think it has to be that. So this might be a good time to reinvigorate that process. I just wrote myself a note to reach out to Kubba.
Oh, thank you.
And then, Julie, I'm happy to talk to you about that, too.
Anyone else? Thoughts about the talk, your practice? Claire? I think I saw Claire's hand raised.
Yeah, you did. I was looking for unmute.
Okay.
I just really appreciated your talk. And the part that's going to stay with me is about if I were in a flood, that I wouldn't think about where is this water coming from? Why? You know, I would just take care of things. I would just do what needs to be done. I just get that. And yeah, that's what I'm doing. Thank you so much for putting that into words.
Oh, you're welcome. I think in scenes. That helps. Thank you. Jean.
I actually think Rosie was a little ahead of me.
Oh, okay. Hey, Rosie. You need to unmute.
I just want to give a pitch for Kalyanamitta groups, since who I'm looking at are part of several that I'm in and how much they've meant to me. As the Buddha said, spiritual friends are not 99% of the practice, they are 100% the pack practice, or something like that.
Yes. Yes. Yep. I've five and two been in them for a long time, and several of my KM partners are here today supporting me. Now, Jean.
Thank you. I really appreciated your talk. And I think the part that resonated for me was using the power of imagination to get beyond the spot where I am. In some respects, I think there's kind of an urging to bypass being in the spot that you are when it's in this moment. Oh, a perfection would be for me to say, this doesn't matter, I'm moving towards equanimity. So I bypass the pain and the ugliness, maybe, or whatever it might be, of what's happening in this moment. And I've been sort of swallowed by that. And what I want to look at now, investigate, because of your encouragement, is the power of imagination to see something different. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome, Jean. I think that our imaginations are incredibly powerful. And it takes courage. It takes courage to really look at what's happening and think, how can I stand with this? And yeah, that spiritual bypassing is so tempting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you.
Anyone else? This is such a juicy subject. Lauren, unmute.
Okay. I just wanted to quickly say that the fierce energy is a little hard for me. Is it? I'm unmuted now. Yeah. Because is it, when I go to fierce, I go to anger, and the word fierce is like that. However, the thing I was thinking of, we mentioned at the end with Joan Halifax, strong back, soft front, in that there's a firmness, a grounded in staying steadily with something, even despite a lot of vicissitudes back and forth. So I just wanted to say that I really resonated with the strong back, soft front, which to me is like imagination, because it's that's the way I get answers a lot of time, trusting emergence. You know, I just go internally open, and something comes up, and it might be a word, or it might be an image, or it might be a sensation. And so that imagination also was really an important source for me. And I've been falling into the fierce anger and getting stuck in, why did this happen? And, you know, what are these people thinking? And I have to go into that space of the imagination to get something that's internal and grounding. I just want to say that.
Oh, thanks for sharing that, Lauren, because the fears can be a very charged, hot word. So, yeah.
Especially right now.
Yeah. Sooth.
Something that came up in our group that I shared was when imagination turned out to not be used quite so skillfully. I was with a friend who was extremely reactive she was in an aversive state of mind and just couldn't seem to be spinning out of control, and I used my imagination. But in retrospect, I think what I was really doing was trying to fix it. And so I just wanted to share the caution of, you know, our conditioning is so strong, and our habits of and leaning into trying to make it better. So just kind of like a my experience, and it was a warning for me of stopping and looking at, well, where's this imagination going?
Yeah. Sandy, I think you had a hand up. Thanks, Suze.
Yes, thank you. I was just reflecting on that idea of fierce energy as well. I had just read one of Sharon Salzberg's books where she talks about when she was abroad and someone was trying to reach into a rickshaw and steal something from her. And she came back and she spoke with her meditation teacher, and he reflected back to her with all the loving kindness. Why did you not hit them with your umbrella? And she was, you know, trying to practice loving kindness. So I think of that and, you know, with like fierce, like we can do, you know, we can do that. And also I was just in a training, online training this week with Dr. Kristen Neff, of Mindful Self-Compassion. And the one title for her book is Fierce Self-Compassion. And it was helpful to hear how she talks about and holds space with the tender and the fierce as well in relating to self-compassion, particularly in oppression and discrimination. And that, you know, that's where a lot of the fierce self-compassion comes in, around how we assert boundaries and stand up for ourselves. And so I was just reflecting on that. Yes, the fierce can have that kind of energy, and that as we reflect on it, internalize it, yeah, how can we find ways that, that there is a fierceness, and to this being staying balanced, like we need both, and the tender and the fierce. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sandy. Yeah. Yeah. I think of the fierceness of a mother's love. Jerry, I think you had a hand up, and then we're going to have to.
Yeah, too quickly. First of all, thank you, Candace. Really nice talk. Appreciate it. I appreciate your bringing in particular, you know, the imagination piece. And for me, yeah, and that's what Sandy is saying, what Susan is saying as well. It's imagination is fine, but it's important to have imagination based on something. And we're basing it on our practice, basing it on not causing harm, because you can certainly imagine things which are taking over the universe, you know. It gets back to our practice.
Yep.
How can I imagine a kind, generous, fierce response to the current circumstances based on my not wanting to cause harm?
Thank you, Jerry.
And again, thank you, Candace.
Just briefly, they also just gently remind that SIMS teachings and gatherings are offered freely. If you're able, Donna is beautiful for the Sangha or for particular teachers. And we're presently raising funds for a community meeting space at the Friends Center, so that we can have more events, and people are coming up with all kinds of wonderful ideas, and even maybe getting a library again of Dharma books, who knows? So that's another place that you might donate. And volunteering, of course, is another great way to give. And both of those buttons are prominent and right on the front page, donate and volunteer, on the SIMS website. So you'll find all the links you need there.
They're actually on every page, by the way.
Every page. Okay. This is our website guru. So
I just want to say I looked for some of the new LDL teachers donate buttons for like PayPal, and I can't find them.
Ah, well, I think like for myself, I think right now I would prefer that money to go to Sims and Tim for all the training he did for us for a year. So, yeah. But thanks for the nudge, Lauren. Thank you. And thank you all. And may the merit of our practice here today, the warmth of Sangha, the metta we all share, be of benefit to our aching world and our aching earth. And may all beings above, below, to either side, know love and peace and a sense of community. And may all beings be peaceful. Thank you.